Welcome to Press Start, an alt-NPR podcast on the art and culture of video gaming. I'm Kyle Orlan.
And I'm Ralph Cooper.
And we're going to get a little meta on you today, because we're part of video game journalism, and we're also going to talk about video game journalism. And some of you might be wondering, you know, oh, what's video game journalism? You know, all you guys do is just talk about video games. You know, what is that?
That's Kyle.
That's not journalism.
Hey, Kyle.
Yeah.
What's video game journalism?
Oh, how about that?
How about that?
I don't know. Some people are like, oh, you know, all you guys, you just play games all day, and then you just BS about them, and that's it. You cash a paycheck. It's the easiest job in the world. There's a lot to it.
There's a lot of playing. Within the playing, there's also politics. A lot of video game journalism nowadays is almost going the way of radio, in my opinion, where it's sometimes people are upfront, and then sometimes people are, let's say, coerced for their opinions.
Yeah, it's kind of all of entertainment journalism is always like that. You know, you always have to wonder, are they really trying to advertise the game, or are they giving their honest opinion? You know, it can be real tough to tell sometimes. These are people we count on for access. If we badmouth their game, they can say, well, we're not giving you the games early anymore. We're not going to grant you any interviews.
Right. We're not going to give you assets. We're not going to give you screenshots. We're not going to give you anything. And you'd be surprised how fickle some of the people really are.
You'd be surprised how often it works, too.
Yeah.
And it goes the other way, too. They can use the stick, but they can also use the carrot and giving you, like, exclusive reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, having that first exclusive review, like, you know, IGN had an exclusive review for Grand Theft Auto 4. It was the first one in the United States.
Right.
And they gave it a 10 out of 10. You know, a lot of other places gave it a 10 out of 10, too. So they might have actually thought that it was a 10 out of 10. But when you're trading favors like that, it always gives the idea in the some of the readers' heads, at least, that is this their honest opinion, or are they afraid that, you know, if they don't give it a 10, the next exclusive review is going to go to, you know, 1UP.
Bringing up IGN and what they went through with Grand Theft is a good example. The flip side example, however, would be what Eidos did with Kane and Lynch.
And GameSpot.
Yeah,
you want to tell people about the allegations there if they weren't following the story?
I do believe, and please help correct me because I know you're on it. I do believe that GameSpot, Kane and Lynch, like they totally mapped the site, all that kind of stuff. And
there were a lot of ads for Kane and Lynch there, yeah.
Right, and a basic idea was, since we've given you all this stuff, our review should be good.
That was the allegation, yeah.
Right. However, as anyone who has played Kane and Lynch knows, it was easily one of the worst games, worst plot, worst shooting games that anybody has ever seen.
Now, you know, there's always shades of opinion here, but
right.
It's pretty well agreed that
the game
not,
was some cut.
It was not
That's what I'm
game.
Saying. Yeah, I'll go out on my long end of opinion as somebody who went and paid for the game to say that it sucked. However,
there were some people that liked it, but mostly it were low reviews.
Right, and the one guy who got nailed the most over this would be a reporter, I believe, by the name of Jeff Gerstmann.
Gerstmann, yeah.
Yeah, and Jeff got fired for being too critical over the game.
That's the allegation, yeah. He was a big-time guy at GameStop. He'd been there for 10 years. He'd risen to associate editor, and he gave Kane and Lynch a really scathing video review. You watch this review, and he's like, there is no reason to buy this game.
Right.
Blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And, you know, there are all these ads on the site, and he gets fired, you know, out of the blue with no explanation even given to him. He was told to pack up his desk on a Wednesday, and he was gone. And this really created a firestorm. The allegations leaked out. It was never really confirmed by GameSpot or him at the time that this is why he was fired. But everyone just kind of jumped to the conclusion that there was a quid pro quo here, that, you know, we advertise on your site, you give us a good review, and if you don't, there has to be some consequences, and that Jeff got the short end of the stick.
Jeff got the extra short end of the stick, and it also goes to show you, when you talk about video game journalism, it's almost a lot like everything else journalism. You can be 10 years deep in the game and have one bad turn, and that's it.
That's the thing.
You know, that's your career, and it's really kind of tough, to be honest with you. And a lot of times, one of the things that I tend to worry about when I read game reviews, for example, Grand Theft Auto, I can say that I was highly swayed by all of the extremely good reviews on Grand
really
Theft Auto 4. It's
10
rare.
10 out of 10's everywhere.
Everywhere. It's almost just like when Nas's first album came out. It was rated 5 stars by The Source, and everybody and their brother broke their neck to go get that album, including myself personally. And I know the rest of hip-hop is going to scathe me for this, but personally, I was upset because at the time, this is 1993, and it's a 45-minute album. And it was like, come on, man. Like, you got people putting out really good stuff, and, you know, you can't just go and say that this is going to be the same thing as far as, you know, albums go. And it was the same with Grand Theft, where the game was giving really high ratings, and in the past I would not play Grand Theft Auto because I felt like the game didn't really lead you along and kind of let you do whatever you wanted to.
A little repetitive almost, right. All these escort missions.
Right, and I can say with this one, even though they have the multiplayer in there, it's still technically kind of the same game. It's better than the last ones,
right.
But it's technically the same game.
You have to wonder how much the hype behind the Grand Theft Auto 4 release actually plays into these reviews. I mean, the reviewers that got early access to it actually went to Rockstar and played the game. You know, they were locked in a hotel room for like 5 days straight to blast through the game. Rockstar put them up in some cases and was, you know, giving them these nice suites early access to the game. And, you know, they were advertising the hell out of this game. If any of these reviewers gave it less than a 10 out of 10, Rockstar would be mad, but also the audience would be
upset.
Mad. It's kind of are you writing your opinion or are you writing what you think they want you?
The people are.
Yeah, exactly.
And it always makes me look at games and think about that because, you know, we here at Press Start, we like the art of the game. We like the music of the game. We really get into the games.
Yeah.
But with some of the games that come out, they won't get the high rating, maybe because they don't have as many headshots or it's not as bloody.
Yeah, they kind of get into the technical stuff of it too much.
That
really limits the appeal of this video game journalism to people. A lot of people who might be interested in video games don't get into it because they read these reviews and they're like, really, this is what's important? How many polygons there are in the guy's teeth, you know?
Yeah, and also the whole idea of playability sometimes really goes out of the water. I do like Game Informer, as a matter of fact, because one of the things that they rate in there, along with some other people, but I read theirs a little bit more than often, is the playability factor.
Game Informer has some pretty good reviews.
Right.
On that score.
Yeah, they do a pretty good job. Joystick, too.
Joystick does occasional review. 1UPS, I think, has some good reviews.
Yeah, 1UP does, too.
But to be fair to the reviewers, I mean, it's not easy. I mean, Grand Theft Auto 4 is like, how many hours does it take? 60 at least.
At least.
To get through, you know, just the basic story. And,
yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff you could miss there. So it's not like reviewing a movie where you sit for two and a half hours and then you crank out your review. It's really a long lot of work. I mean, it's like, oh, you're playing a game. That's not work. It is work. When you're playing these games, you have to be looking with a critical eye for every detail.
Yeah.
And you have to play for a long time. And frankly, it doesn't really pay much.
No, we're going to say that again. It doesn't really pay much.
get into this for the love of it.
Yeah, you really do. And another thing that some people may not know is that when you review games, a lot of times you play what's called a build version. Sometimes you don't even play the full version of the game. You just play games where you already know that if you go around a certain corner, you're not going to see anything. There's not going to be anything there.
Give you an early preview copy.
Yeah, you know, sometimes your guns may not work the right way. You'll get the idea. But, like, you know, there are a lot of times, especially back in the Xbox days, before the 360 came along, you would have to play on a dev console.
Yeah.
And developer consoles are just, like, you know, you can get games where, you know, you got to put in one disc to load in this, you got to put in another disc to load in that, another disc to load in that, then you have to wait.
And that's because of the long lead times that you need. You know, the game's not quite done, but if you want that review on launch day, you need to play this incomplete version. And often you have to go by what the company says. You know, Konami recently with Metal Gear Solid 4, they released review copies to certain people, and then they pretty much demanded that people not talk about the install times for the game, not talk about how long the cutscenes were, and now that the game's out, we can say they are really,
really,
really
long.
And, you know, if you didn't agree to this stuff, they would not give you the game. You had to sign something saying to this. Of course, word of this leaked out, and if you were in the know, if you were reading the right blogs, you could see that Konami was trying to skew the reviews, and I think that damaged them more than just not having it would have, and if they were just talking about the cutscene length. But it makes you wonder how many times there's a review that has these preconditions on it for early access that you don't hear about.
Well, you know, and using Metal Gear also as a great example of a game, you know, one of the things that kind of got swept under the rug, in my opinion, was Konami's exceptionally bad attempt at the online beta.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't see, once again, in the game journalism circles, this talked about as much. Like, they talked about it when it happened.
What you mean the delays coming out?
I mean the delays and the never working. In fact, some of you out there will know what I'm talking about. They certain GameStops were giving out Metal Gear Solid discs.
And
I have it. I have it at the crib, and it says, congratulations, you qualified for this PlayStation beta. And even the beta had a long-ass loading time. So, like, I'm sitting here, I'm waiting for this thing
that
to load.
That did get talked about a lot.
Yeah, and it didn't work. It didn't work. And,
these install keys did not work. I think that got covered pretty well, but you never know with these things.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, even with the, I guess, and I'm saying cover pretty well is not what, what I'm looking for. I guess what I'm saying is we are people who read this stuff. We know about it. We're right. in it. However, when I'm talking to your average man on the street, sometimes even your average GameStop or, you know, game work, wherever you go to buy your games, sometimes you even workers there, they don't know this stuff.
Yeah, well, you know? That's a whole different issue.
Agreed.
About
agreed.
Retail issues. I mean, but if you'd hope that they would keep up with this stuff.
Well, I guess that's what I'm leading into here is like, you know, these are people with access to read these magazines. These are people with access to read some of these books. And some places, as we all know, are better than others. But it's one of those things where it almost tells you what the real reach of game journalism is, you know.
Yeah.
Like there are some people who I know, whether Madden gets a great review from IGN, GameSpot, and anybody else, will go out and buy Madden.
That's true. You know? How much effect do we really have,
right.
you know, outside of the real hardcore fans that are really discriminating about this stuff? And even among those people, how many of them are actually reading the reviews, and how many of them are just jumping to the score? You know, would you rather read 500 words or just one number?
Well, I mean, you know, that's just the simplicity of the world at
there's
this point.
You know,
I mean,
there's
nothing you can do. I mean, if a game, it almost makes you wonder if people came out with like a digest for games, like a Jet almost, and you know, it was just a small thing, even a Beauty in the Week. You know, what I'm saying, there's nothing wrong with that, right? You know, but instead of having long articles about every game, just quick blurbs about the articles and stars to say whether or not the game was good, bad, playable, this
places
and the other.
Do that. Like Maxim has a video game review section
right.
that does stuff like that, and
right.
it kind of. In a way, that's what the readers want, and you can't really blame them for going into that. And in another way, I mean, what does that do to advance the discourse of game journalism? How is that going to, you know, get it treated like the artistic medium that it is? There are a few sites doing good stuff. You know, I've written for The Escapist that tends to do longer form features about that really get into what video games are about more than these, you know, consumer-oriented reviews that just 5 stars you should buy it, 1 star you shouldn't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see more of that stuff.
And I agree.
I think as time goes on, we will, as video game audience continues to get older and really wants to think about these things. It's getting more and more out there. It's just going to take time.
Well, game journalism is also running into a very strange crossroads because the average age of the gamer, as we all know, is around my wonderful age of 30, 32.
Yeah, back when it started, I mean, anyone who could string two words together and knew how to play a game
it was a
could get in there. Now it's kind of,
right,
the standards are getting higher.
Way higher, not to mention the fact that gaming now, where you have like Major League Gaming, where you got people who are actually, you know, like they're doing tournaments all over the country. Mm-hmm. Like the level that which people are going to start having to talk to gamers is just not going to be your normal fly-by-night, play this game, it sucks, or don't play this game, it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the reviewers that I've been seeing online are a little different. Like you've got Angry Video Game Nerd, you've got Zero Punctuation.
Yahtzee Croshaw, Zero
right.
Punctuation. Does these real quick-form reviews where it's just really fast-paced sentences with videos on top of them.
Right. Where it almost seems like the guy doesn't use any punctuation, but it's just because he talks right. It's just...
And those are really entertaining, but,
right.
you know, I don't... Even stuff like that, it doesn't have as much effect on the actual publishers as something like Metacritic or Game Rankings, where they take a bunch of reviews, they take the scores of them, and they just average them out.
Right.
And so this game is an 81 out of 100.
Mm-hmm.
And you would be amazed how much the publishers care about that one number.
Yeah.
People lose their bonuses.
Yeah.
PR people, if that number is not above 90.
Right.
As if the PR people could make the game better.
That much better, right.
As if they can buy off the reviewers.
Well, you know, PR is all about being able to talk your game. And so, like,
that's
a lot
true.
Of times, you know, these guys really, they talk a great game. They you know, let's remember the early Microsoft-Apple days where Microsoft really tilted the whole skew of the computer gaming world in general, in my opinion.
Right.
Because Microsoft used to flat out just send you a computer and be like, hey, how's this? And Apple, you know, you have to go somewhere to try the Apple stuff. And after a while, the ultra-schmoozing techniques that Microsoft used pretty much, at least for a small amount of time, crushed any real competition.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah, you know, and with some of the video game stuff, some of that still exists. I'm not going to say that it doesn't. But then you have events like E3 where you can kind of go and see things for yourself. You have the Penny Arcade Expo where you can go and see new games.
But
builds.
Even with stuff like E3, you have to be invited.
That's
nowadays.
Right.
So
that's
if
right.
you're not
you if you're not on if you're not on par, and I'd just like
list.
To say for whatever it's worth, we were invited.
We
again,
will be invited.
Yeah. So you know, we're happy about
and
that.
And we did not have to pay off anyone or get
no.
Paid
we
off.
Didn't. We didn't. We didn't. Even though no, we're not accepting bribes.
not anymore.
Not no. No. We're upright NPR journalists. That's what we do. Yeah, we're going to crap on your game if it's
bad. And speaking of NPR, you know, just the fact that NPR is covering video games now, even through a podcast.
Yeah, I agree.
And they do stuff on the air, too.
No, they do. We have both had the opportunity to speak on NPR shows about games.
And it's becoming a cultural phenomenon almost.
I agree.
It's breaking out of that little magazine website niche and getting to be something that newspapers cover. But it's kind of baby steps now.
Yeah, in a way. I mean, but when you look at it, you know, the newspaper that everybody, including NPR, CNN, NBC, follows, the New York Times, at least once a month does a gaming pullout section where, you know, they review everything. If something big is coming out that month, they have a splash on it. You know, they do tend to cover a lot more than what we're seeing in the past.
It is, yeah, I like the way the trend is going. It's not quite up to the level of movie reviews, but then again, video games really aren't up to the level of movies.
I mean, well, monetarily speaking, they may be, but
it's getting there.
Yeah, but I mean,
and among the youth, it definitely, you know, more people are. But among the general population, especially people reading newspapers, I mean, the average age of the New York Times reader. Got to be in the 50s, something like that.
We're not real sure on the stats.
Not knocking old people. NPR, we can't really.
Yeah, no, old people play the Wii. I mean, what am I supposed to be mad at you?
There you go.
You know, I mean, and I also think that the platforms actually have had an impact.
You mean like the Wii?
Well, the Wii is one, but I mean just, all right, look at the fact that with the 360 and the PS3, we saw one of the major next generation, in my opinion, battles go down when it came to 360 and the HD drive and the PS3 and the Blu-ray. That was a really big kind of a battle. And even if people didn't really own either system, it became a factor in whether or not you bought the system. For some people, you bought the system.
And it kind of factored into the coverage of the business side of it.
It sure did.
You know, the movie battle got into the video game
battle. It sure did, because as soon as the industry decided to go with Blu-ray as the next HD standard, it kind of left Microsoft at a lull because they went and put a little bit of money into doing this HD DVD add-on to your 360, and now I do believe that you can actually get a rebate. You can get your money back or some kind of rebate.
Yeah, you can get like $50 back if you bought one late. But
sorry. Go ahead.
But you know, it's going to the PS3. I wonder how much when the PS3 came out, a lot of the press was really savaging it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just too expensive. Not enough good games. Too expensive. Too expensive.
Yeah.
The games aren't there yet. Too expensive.
Yeah, too expensive.
It was really hammering it. And I wonder how much that actually affected people who were not necessarily willing to go $600 for a game when it was getting this savaged by the press. I mean, we do have some power there.
You know, I agree. But I would also say that you can also see the lack of power at some points of the press, because there were some people that, regardless of whatever they said about the PS3, were getting it.
The fanboys.
Yeah, the fanboys were there. But I will say that you can see the direct impact, because even now, their games are just starting to increase.
Mm-hmm.
They're still kind of lagging behind 360. The Wii is getting by on novelty, in my opinion.
That's true.
And, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm stuck in the novelty for whatever it's worth.
But now that the PS3's price is coming down and some games are coming out, like Metal Gear Solid 4 recently, I've seen the press really start to turn around on it.
Yeah.
So it's not that we have something against Sony, you know, that we all got together at our big meeting and said, okay, this time Sony's going down. They've had the PlayStation 2, we can't have them another. No, it wasn't like that. It was just we were trying to empirically look at the situation and make the best recommendation out there. And now that the PS3 is getting better, the press is going to reflect that.
And I say another example would be also to look at Sony, and they're now starting to have success with the PSP.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first generation of the PSP, I can totally attest to not only complaining about it myself, but a lot of people were having major issues with it, whether it was
battery life,
whether
load
it
times.
Was at low times, whether it was the little nib breaking off and losing it. Whereas now with the new one, it's smaller, it's lighter.
Mm-hmm.
You can output the AV to things that people were calling for. Sony actually listened
Sony
to.
Listened. That's, use, and that's you, what the press does.
And
really.
That's what the press does. You can use Skype on the PSP now. Like all kinds of things where people were saying, like, I wish, or it would be better if, also had that effect. So, you know, game journalism in that situation, to me, was a good catalyst.
I feel like we're kind of the filter between the audience and the companies. You know, the audience can't obviously call up Sony and just tell them what they want, and Sony can't just go directly to the consumer and tell them what they want without it seeming, you know, biased. We're kind of the mediator
between
the two of them. And I think that helps out.
And you know, at the end of the day, like, you know, we still don't see newsrooms with just like dedicated video game journalists.
No, but
I'm hoping it comes to that, it would be wonderful to have once a week on a morning edition or even All Things Considered Weekend or anything, to have like a once a month or a once a week guy that comes in. I know Mario Armstrong tends to do some of that coverage, but it would be nice to have a permanent person on each show.
It
won't be long. It can't be long because you have to compete, especially nowadays when you can hear video game stuff on just about any kind of electronic music player that you have, including your PSP.
So through this very podcast.
Yeah, very much. So what are you playing, Kyle?
I've been playing my word processor a lot.
That's right.
Writing a book and haven't had much time to even get into, you know, Metal Gear Solid 4 or anything. I've been playing a little Trackmania.
Trackmania.
You ever hear about that game?
No, which one is that?
It's a driving game out of Europe, and it's kind of ridiculous stunt tracks, you know, the loop-de-loops, and you're flying through the air, and you got to turn in midair, and banks, and it's not realistic at all, but when you see your car just doing, like, the 720 flip in midair
and
landing and going... It's just great.
Yeah, word. I'm knee deep in Ninja Gaiden 2 right now to the point that I can't play anything else. I was playing the new UEFA Euro game for the Xbox 360, and I was quite happy with that.
Are you simulating out your own? That's better than the reality.
Well, no, actually, what's cool for a change is that my game is actually reflecting reality because I'm playing with the Netherlands.
Oh.
And that's the team wearing orange, for those of you who are watching. And they're killing people. They beat the world champs Italy by 3-1. They beat France 4-1.
And, of course, when you control them, they also
killed
them.
Yeah, they also killed them. So
what else could happen?
Yeah, I was quite happy with that. Art imitating life? Can't beat that. And I'll tell you something else that I've been playing that I feel might be a sleeper, but Deca Sports for the Wii.
Oh, I played that a little bit.
Yeah, I kind of like Deca Sports.
Curling?
Yeah, absolutely.
Curling
absolutely.
Is the
best. Me and my girlfriend are actually in a full-out battle over the curling.
Chess on ice.
Yeah. That's nice. I like that. I like the curling, and I like the soccer that they did on there. That's kind of fun.
It's fun.
And I feel like, for whatever it's worth, real quick review, that the Deca Sports actually plays a little bit better than Wii Sports to me. I'd be interested to see if the same company did bowling. That's the only thing that seems a little
different. It depends on the sport. You know, the go-kart racing felt really
kind of it's kind of off.
With 10 sports, they're not all going to be great, but there are definitely like 3 or 4 archery I really loved.
Oh, that
there.
Was so great.
I think part of it might just be Olympic fever, you know, with the Olympics coming up, I'd play anything.
I'm with you. Even though I have not played the Sonic and Mario at the Olympics.
Well, anything.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't really see myself going there. But other than that...
If you want to simulate that game, you can just pick up your controller and shake it real fast.
Shake it a lot.
and you're done.
You're doing the same thing.
And whoever shakes it faster wins.
That sounds like a wrap.
The end.
Word. So, we'll be back soon in another 2 weeks. So for Press Start, this is Ralph Cooper.
And Kyle Orland.
Big shout out to Rob, and big shout out to my daughter, who I'm sure you all heard beating on the glass. And we'll talk to you guys soon.
Later.
Peace.